And let's give a minute or two for people to log in.
It's nice when you see the number of people going up. Fabiana, you have the new evolution of the background.
So let's begin our webinar. Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar on the topic of decarbonization of steel and cement industries, organized by the Carbon Transition Initiative of the Emerging Markets Investors Alliance. My name is Pavel Aberko. I coordinate the Carbon Transition Initiative. Emerging Markets Investors Alliance is a nonprofit organization founded and run by current and former emerging market financial professionals. We are an alliance of investors working closely with civil society experts and corporate and sovereign issuers. Our vision is to create a world in which investors take responsibility for the impact of their investments, consistently advocate for ESG best practices, and transform finance into a powerful force for good governance and sustainability. A few words about the organization of today's webinar. We're going to see presentations by experts from the Climate Bonds Initiative, who will discuss the challenges and opportunities in decarbonizing two industries where reducing greenhouse gas emissions is particularly complicated. After that, or during the presentation, our experts will answer your questions, which you can submit by using the Q&A button at the bottom of your screen. Please remember that press is not allowed and quotations or attributions are also not allowed. The webinar today will be moderated by Fabrizio Palmucci, Senior Advisor at the Climate Bonds Initiative. Fabrizio works with issuers, originating banks, as well as investors to reduce market friction and improve risk differentiation for transition and green investments. He has spent close to 20 years in the fixed income buy-side space in different roles, including trading, credit analysis and strategy, and also with rating agencies. I will now pass the microphone to Fabrizio for further introduction of our guest speakers. Fabrizio, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Pavel. Do you hear me well?
Yes.
Oh, okay. What an intro, and so exciting to be part of this webinar and see so much attendees for two sectors that were not so exciting before, but there's lots of excitement there, of course. I mean, cement and steel so important from different perspective and to enable the transition. So it's really my great pleasure to be here representing Climate Bonds Initiative, but as well having my expert colleagues, Fabiana Contreras, who is our technical lead on those two sectors. And she has a wealth of experience in those sectors. Fabio Passaro, our policy expert, there is nothing we can do or not, well, we won't be able to decarbonize fully those industries without policies. And obviously this is a really important, and Fabio, that's his specialty. So he will talk to us today about how we work, how policymakers are working in that space. And of course, our Paul Vermaak, who's head of standards at Climate Bonds Initiative, he really oversees all the criteria that are used by investors to invest in green bonds, sustainability bond, etc. So that's the intro. Pavel, if we could bring the slides, and we'll go through some slides. I'll give you a sense of the agenda. But if you have any questions, don't hesitate to put them either in the Q&A box or in the chat option. Okay, so we have here, let's say the pathway. Can say the pathway to net zero, perhaps, but that's the pathway to the webinar today. So I'll talk a little bit about Climate Bonds Initiative, what we do, and the tools that investors are using to tackle climate change in their portfolio in those two industries. Then we'll go into the background of steel and cement, why they are so important, and why today we are at an inflection point. We're going to have to go into the process of making steel and cement. We're not going to go into the fine detail, but I think it's important to go through that. And then, of course, it's about credible transition for those sectors. We'll go through the criteria that we think are important for those sectors to embrace the role of policy, and then we'll go to case studies, SLB case study for steel, and as well some pilot projects of virtuous pilot projects for steel and cement, which are being implemented around the world. Let's start with the next slide, please. Thank you, Pavel. So Climate Bonds Initiative, like EMEA, we are a non-for-profit NGO. We have a big role in bond markets. Why? First, we define the climate aligned activities, and I'll go through that in a second. We define what good looks like from a transition planning perspective. And on that basis, we issue standards. Those standards are available on our website. You see on the left-hand side, the cover of version 3. Very soon, in a couple of weeks, we're going to be expanding that to certifying sustainability linked bonds, assets, and as well entities, which is quite a big step. As of today, we certify about 300 billion of bonds and loans under our standard. So that's on the issuance side, and that gives us obviously a reason for us to talk to you about those industries which are object of this webinar. On the right-hand side, you can see the work we do with, well, the investors that actually we work very closely with. This is just a small list, but we have close to 100 what we call partners, and they use our frameworks and our databases that I will explain in a second to tackle climate change in their portfolios. Next slide, please. So the two main tools, these are publicly available on our website, climatebonds.net. On the left-hand side, you have the taxonomy. This is the list of activities. There's about 50 categories there, activities that are aligned to a 1.5 pathway. Today, we're going to talk about steel and cement, which is in the industrial segment. And those activities are bottom-up. If you think about a company, they have different activities. That's great. But of course, you have the top-down, which is a transition plan from a climate perspective. And that transition plan, the analysis of it, is on the right-hand side in a paper that we have written some time ago, which is called Credible Transition Plans. I'm not going to go through all of that. This is available on our website. But the important point is that those two tools are the foundation of the certification for green bonds, transition bonds, assets, but as well SLBs, sustainability bonds, and entities that we're going to roll out in a couple of weeks. Very last slide in terms of the tools that investors are using. A popular tool, please, next one, please. Our green bond database, SLB database, social bond database is used by investors. to identify those green bonds that are credible or climate aligned. Today, about 30% are not aligned. And you have here an example of Visa and KfW. I'm not going to go through that, but it's very important to understand that active investors usually use that, but as well, indices. This is some of the tools that we provide. I'll stop there and let's go into the hard stuff with Fabiana. If you can kick us off about the basics of cement and steel, that would be really great. Thank you, Fabiana.
Thanks, Fabrizio. So, Pavel, please, the next slide. Let's start talking about these sectors and why should we care about them and investments in steel and cement. So first, these are basically the materials we use to build our modern world. But the production sends a lot of CO2 to our atmosphere, right? So if you see this chart, we have a comparison of different industrial sectors, and iron and steel are in red, and they represent 8% of all emissions, so the highest emitting. And then cement represents 7% and is in orange. In the case of steel, most emissions come from the traditional blast furnace, which is how we make 70% of global production of steel. And it's dependent on coal. So you start seeing there what we need to tackle there. Then for cement, this is the second most consumed material on Earth. So this already builds up in the emissions that it produces. And later I'm going to explain a little bit where the emissions come from and how to solve this issue. So where is the opportunity? The production of these materials is highly concentrated. For both, more than 50% is done in China. India is also one of the main producers, and the rest of the production is divided around the world. But demand for steel and cement will keep increasing alongside populations and the standards of living. And both products are vital for infrastructure and net zero transition. So the exercise we embarked on with our criteria was answering the question of how can we meet this demand by following a transition pathway that will help us limit climate change to 1.5 degrees. So the technologies and solutions are there. We're going to talk a bit about that. And what we know is that without action to set ambitious climate criteria for industry, efforts will fall short on meeting the Paris Agreement. So next slide. All right, so here we start seeing the opportunities. By 2030, a large amount of steel and cement existing fleet will require reinvestment. For the case of, in this chart, we see how this happens around the world for steel. So 71% of global existing coal-based blast furnaces and 30% of EU cement assets will need reinvestment by 2030. So 2050 is only an investment cycle away. This is that basically steel and cement facilities have long lifetimes. So around they can reach until 40 years. So the decisions that are made by 2030 are very important because we could risk locking in trillions of dollars in stranded assets. Steel and cement companies are setting net zero targets to comply with changing regulations and to reduce their emissions. And when it comes to the investment, the size of the investment, it's estimated that around $56 billion a year is needed to transition the steel industry by 2050, and $70 billion a year is needed between 2030 and 2040 to transition cement. So this tells us already where the opportunities are. So next slide. All right, so we're going to start talking about the criteria, and this is just a generic slide to let you know that I didn't come up with this, what we have in our criteria. This was done by a group of experts that we convened. These are people from academia, public entities, research institutes, and policy bodies, and they are the owners of the criteria. We also have an industry working group that reviews the documentation and also provides advice and feedback, but they don't have the last word. So the technical working group work is independent from industry work. And basically they have the last word. So next. And so what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna explain this very quick for steel and then just tell you about how do we decarbonize steel, and then I'm gonna do it for cement. And this is a very generic, obviously, because otherwise it would be very complicated. So here you see the two main ways we have right now to produce steel. The traditional blast furnace is in the top. It needs coal. It is not very circular because you can only use up to 30% of recycled steel. The rest is iron ore that is then reduced using the coal. And this is why you can reach up to 2.9 tons of CO2 per tons of steel of emissions in a blast furnace facility. But then we have the electric arc furnace. You can use it two different ways, either with 100% of recycled steel or scrap and just melt it and then you make steel. Or you can combine it with iron, with DRI, which is direct reduced iron.
Yeah.
And this is done in a DRI oven. And you can use also coal, but you can replace the coal with fossil gas or hydrogen. So you can see here that if you replace the fossil gas or the coal with green hydrogen, and then you power the EAF with renewable energies, you have a very low emissions process. So that's why the emissions of this what we normally call the secondary route, are almost half compared to the ones of blast furnaces, and can be very low carbon. So next. So then we have the basis for what is a credible transition for steel, and this is what we are encouraging with our criteria. This chart sometimes is like a bit difficult to get, but it's basically a transition pathway. So you see how the emissions need to lower until 2050, where we want to be on close to zero or net zero. In the case of steel, we divide it between primary and secondary, but that basically tells us that the secondary, which is whatever comes from recycled steel, it starts from a lower point of emissions because it's like that. And this is what is behind all our criteria. So what we take from this, and this is a summary, is that for primary steel, we need to promote energy efficiency and the use of alternative fuels in existing production. Also, we have the premise of preventing locking in of high carbon technologies. So we don't accept new unabated fossil-based plants. And we also say that in existing facilities, the implementation should be of a bundle of mitigation measures that really lower significantly the emissions of those plants to be accepted as climate bonds. Yeah. Then for secondary steel, we promote low carbon energy. This is mostly for the EAF, right? So investments in low emissions DRI EAF capacity, prioritizing emerging technologies, and increase the percentage of steel produced by scrap process. So this is the summary for steel. Next slide. All right, if we look at cement, this is the main process to produce cement. And for cement, the main issue is in what is highlighted in this slide. So if we look at the way we produce it now, emissions are concentrated in the part of the process where limestone is separated at very high temperatures into lime and CO2. So in the process itself, we're taking out CO2, and there is the first bunch of emissions that can reach to around 60% of emissions of the whole process. And then you have to combine the lime at, again, even more high temperature with clay to produce and sand to produce clinker. So getting to these very high temperatures, the current way we do it is by burning fossil fuels. So there you got the other, it can reach to more than 30% of emissions of the whole process. So these two things are the combination that makes cement a very high emitting material. So traditionally, the most common use type of cement is called Portland cement, and it consists of 95% of clinker. Clinker is what comes out of this final process I mentioned. So making clinker is very energy intensive. So this is, I explained about clinker because this is the key of making cement low emissions, right? So by reducing the clinker content with something that we call supplementary cementitious materials, so SCMs, you can have large CO2 savings. So I will go to the next slide. And it's similar to the one we had for steel. So you have two decarbonization pathways. In this case, the top one is for company level. And then the more strict one is for the plant, because at plant level, you can be a bit more aggressive. And we have a dotted line in 2030. But this is basically to show that the things at the left, we are already doing and we need to maximize it. But then comes newer technologies that we also need to promote and start doing. It's not that we need to do them after 2030, but just to show a bit where we are at. So we need to maximize electrical efficiency and thermal efficiency for these high temperatures. We need to find replacements for the fossil fuels we're using, for example, waste-derived fuels. And of course, maximizing the use of these SCMs that I was mentioning. So this means improve clinker quality to allow that the clinker can be mixed more efficiently with these SCMs, and also maximize the use of the novel and highly reactive SCM substitutions, fuel switching to zero carbon alternatives, for example, green hydrogen, and finding ways to electrify the kilns. And carbon capture storage is also an option. And we already see projects where this is happening. So yeah, this is the highlighting ones. So this is the technological side of things. And now if we go to the next slide, we have a very important part of everything, which is the role of policy. And this goes for Fabio.
Thank you, Fabiana. Thank you, Fabrizio and Pavel, for the introduction. So as we've just seen, low carbon steel and cement production will need significant capex and billions of dollars to transition to net zero. And this is why policymakers will play a major role in incentivizing investment in low carbon steel and cement. So favorable regulations are being implemented right now to drive change across different economies. And here we're looking at two specific examples, the EU ETS, which is the emission trading system, and the recently adopted Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, the CBAM. So the ETS is one of the flagship EU policies, and it represents one of the global carbon policies. And it works on a cap and trade principle, meaning that within this cap, companies need to either buy or receive allowances that they can then trade with each other. And it currently covers energy intensive industries, such as both steel and cement. Now, the EU carbon price is established via this ETS, and it doubled in the last couple of years, and it reached the 100 euro milestone in the last few weeks. So it would be very, very important for steel and cement companies to take that into account when building their business plan. And why is that? Because the change is that so far, the steel and cement industry in the EU has not been subject to the price of carbon pollution under this ETS, due to concerns about carbon leakage, which would be the risk that this EU steel and cement production would become less competitive compared to lower cost and higher emissions imports from countries where there are less strict environmental regulations. So as now, the idea is to try and reduce and phase out these free allowances that are given to the industry so that net zero targets can be reached. Now the CBAM has been proposed and recently been adopted. What we will do is that it will impose a border tariff on the high carbon imports of both steel and cement, among other products. And the main obligation here lies with the importers, who will need to declare and then purchase the CBAM certificates so that they can cover the emissions that are associated with the steel and cement products. It's going to be very important because by 2030, it's estimated to be around 8 billion euros, what will be paid by steel and cement companies under the ETS and the CBAM. And it's going to be applied very soon. So it will start officially later this year in October, before a 3-year transitional period, then will start being applied in 2026, where the companies will have to pay for this carbon price. And even though the CBAM and ETS are being implemented in the EU, they are going to be very important for non-EU companies and non-EU countries, because these are the companies that then will have to pay this carbon border tax at the border to the EU and pay this adjustment. So it's going to be relevant for other economies too. If we can go to the next slide, please, Pavel. Thank you. So this shows how policy is important, that there are two other examples that we can make here of policies that are being implemented that are going to be important to decarbonize. These two are to abate sectors, and these are carbon quota for difference and green public procurement policies in particular. So as we've seen in the previous slides that Fabiana presented, low carbon steel and cement require significant capex, and especially in the short and in the medium term, making low carbon steel and cement is going to be more expensive than the conventional fossil-based processes. So these high production costs in particular can represent a big barrier to the development of these innovative technologies. Now, carbon capture for difference can mitigate this problem because they would cover the difference between the conventional and the innovative production processes, giving the companies a big incentive to invest in these alternatives. While green power procurement can also be very, very important because not only does it send a great market signal that there will be demand for these low carbon projects and products, but it will also make significant contribution to the government and public authorities itself, net zero targets and sustainability targets, so that they would have to allow for a big reduction in their own emissions, because the green power procurement brings a great opportunity to boost the demand and reduce emissions at the same time. Now, the challenge, of course, is in defining what is green and what can be bought, which is where taxonomy criteria and standards and criteria like those developed by climate bonds can help, so that the consistency of the sustainable investment is guaranteed and is really aligned with 1.5 and credible. Now, public procurement is very important again because it's massive. It represents around $11 trillion per year, more than 10% of the global GDP. And in this sector in particular, it's very significant because it represents around 40 and 25 respectively of the demand for cement and steel. And in most cases, unfortunately, clean power procurement criteria are only voluntary and could be replaced gradually with a mandatory criteria, so that would lead to much bigger change. And with this regard, in 2021, there have been some progress, such as the coalition of government and organization that's been led by the UK and by India, that has led this new clean energy ministerial initiative, the Industrial Deep Decarbonization, which is exactly aimed at this. So creating a market demand for low carbon industrial materials with a particular focus on both steel and cement. So this demonstrates the need for policy to incentivize the investment in green steel and cement, which requires significant capex, as we can see. And if we can move to the next slide, please.
Just two questions on those points. First, on the contract for difference, where and when? So this is EU specific, and when do you, just question mark, and then when do you think this is going to be into force?
Yeah, so carbon for difference have been used mostly in the electricity sector around the world. And now for industries, particularly, are going to be implemented in the EU as a start, and many other economies are looking into it. And same applies to the ETS and the CBAM. Some UK, Canada, US, they've all announced they are looking into similar instruments. So quite relevant, well beyond the EU. And it's going to be for carbon capture for difference, it's going to be implemented in the EU very soon. It's as a result of the ETS reform. By the end of the year, they're going to start with the first calls for applications for products and energy intensive industries like steel and cement. So a lot of news in the coming months. They're going to be very interesting and with this regard. And to go to this slide, yes, so as we've seen, the role of policy will be important, but many companies, both steel and cement companies, are already making investments in low carbon steel and low carbon cement production and these innovative technologies. For example, according to the Green Steel Tracker, there have been more than 70 announcements of green steel projects that will be online in the next decade. So a lot of innovation coming in recent years. Here we're looking at three specific projects, two for steel and one for cement. First is hybrid and H2 green steel. They've been developed between Sweden, Finland, and Spain. They both aim at using green hydrogen to reduce more than 90% of the emission and replace coal. And this is going to be very important for these countries because, as we've seen, coal is the major source of emitting of emissions. And for Sweden and for Finland, the success of these projects and reducing the emissions in steel would allow for a 10% and 7% respectively emissions reduction in the whole country. So it's going to be to have a massive impact on those. And the other thing that is important is that it's encouraging as well, the fact that very recently in May 2022, some steel buyers, some companies among which BMW and Mercedes-Benz have been pre-purchased 1.5 million tons of green steel from the H2 Green Steel projects, meaning that these offtake agreements would represent more than half of the yearly production capacity that's been envisioned now by H2 Green Steel, showing that the business case can be made, and they've already sold more than half of the steel that they're planning to produce in the future. While for cement here, we're looking at the LEILAC projects, which stands for Low Emissions Intensity Lime and Cement, which is a project that started in 2016. And it would basically allow for the direct separation at a cement plant of the non-combustion CO2 emission. And we've seen Fabiana explained that there is these two different sources of emissions that are the most important ones. So the chemical reaction represents around 60% of the emissions in cement production, and another 30 that is dependent on the fuel that is used. So as we've seen here, this LEILAC project would capture the emissions that are only the chemical reactions, so independent from the fuel that is used. So these are the most challenging to tackle usually. And then the LEILAC phase two is started a few years ago in 2020, and it aims at also testing the feasibility of using an electric kiln instead of fossil fuel-based heating, which would then together basically allow for a very deep decarbonization of the cement production process. Now, the significant investment that is needed to transition the steel and cement industry can also be financed through financial instruments like SLB. If we can go to the next slide. Yes, we see here a case study that we selected from JSW Steel, which is an Indian company. And we chose this bond even though it was issued before CBI criteria were finalized. And what's important here is that there are very encouraging aspects, such as the fact that the target that has been chosen by 2030 is very close to the one that we believe is 1.5 aligned and very credible, which is 1.81 ton of CO2 equivalent per ton of primary steel production, which is very close, again, the one that has been chosen by JSW, which is 1.95. But nevertheless, we need to see more ambition from the market and from companies, because what JSW here is aiming at is basically making the facility, the existing facility and the existing technology, as efficient as possible without switching to innovative and breakthrough technologies, which is what we need to see much more ambition by 2050. The other important aspect to underline here is the fact that despite the growth of financial instruments like SLBs, generally speaking, their potential has not really been exploited in steel and cement. In fact, they both represent around 1 to 2% of transition and sustainability linked bonds, showing that there is a lot of potential that can be exploited. And we believe that thanks to standards and criteria like those that are developed by CPI, then investors can really be sure and have the confidence that what they're investing in is really credible, 1.5 aligned. And on top of that, they would also lower the risk of investing in stranded assets, as we've seen that 2050 is only one investment cycle away. Now, thank you, Pavel. If we can move to the next slide, I'm going to pass it to Fabiana to conclude our presentation.
Yeah. Thanks, Fabio. So yes, this is a call for action. So the 2020s, as we have explained, will make it or break the steel and cement clean transition, and there are opportunities and there are risks. The investment opportunity is of fixed 56 billion a year and 70 billion a year for steel and cement, respectively, for the transition to net zero. There are available already net zero technologies, and finance needs to flow to those that are aligned with 1.5 pathways. There is also many opportunities to develop innovative technologies, and a lot to be done. The demand will keep increasing, and is expected to rise steadily in the coming decades, particularly in emerging markets. And if something is not done, there is the risk of changing regulation, including in emerging markets, and risk for corporates and investors investing in stranded assets. And of course, 2050 is only one investment cycle away with these facilities that have long lifetimes. By 2030, 71% of existing coal blast furnaces will require major reinvestments, and 30% for cement in Europe. Steel and cement have also a role in the value chain, so this is a risk for other sectors. Decarbonizing them is critical for a net zero future in construction, automotive, and machinery sectors. So the next slide is just a summary of what we have developed at Climate Bonds. So the links for criteria, I think Pavel already put this in the chat, and also of our policy papers. And now we have time for questions.
Thank you, Fabiana and Fabio. Just one question. Obviously, we're talking about the Emerging Investor Alliance. So I'm supposing we have some emerging market investors. One question coming. Fabio, on your policy side, we talk a lot about Europe, EBAM, ETS. What is the implication for emerging market, do you think?
Yes, so the CBAM in particular would be quite relevant for non-EU countries and emerging markets as well, based on the trade that we have with the EU, not only for steel and cement, but it covers many other sectors, in particular hydrogen, which is going to be quite relevant in the future. So the important thing in the CBAM that is going to be very impactful for those countries is that in case a country has a matching carbon pricing on a commodity, on a product such as steel and cement that are covered by the CBAM, then this carbon price will be recognized by the EU, and the import that is going to the EU, they will not have to pay the carbon price that they've already paid in the first country of origin of production. So that will be deducted at the EU border. And meaning that for one thing, the company will not have to pay it because it will have already paid it in the first country of production, plus this country, the emerging market in particular, will be very, very relevant that because they will keep these revenues or stream revenues for their budget. So this important implication is going to be, it's going to be quite impactful for the countries, because in case they will have a carbon price, let's say in China or in India, then they would keep the revenue and the company will not have to pay it at the border with the EU.
Thank you. I see a very burning question. Is the right way to say it for steel, isn't it, Fabiana? Around gas and electricity for blast furnaces. There's this question on that technology. Can you, the question is, can you comment on the possibilities for substituting blast furnaces by gas? I suppose this is for the DRI process. You're on mute, Fabiana.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, this is a very wide question, but basically the blast furnace is a technology that has been there for many years, so since we started to make steel, and it is very difficult to, there is a limit on how much the emissions can lower in an existing blast furnace, right? So there is not a lot you can do to bring them to levels, at least not those further that our pathway has from 2030. That's why we talk about switching technologies, especially for those very old blast furnaces. So for example, adapting a carbon capture to an existing blast furnace is something that hasn't been done and it's very difficult. However, there are other technologies that are also have also been there for a long time, like the electric arc furnace. I think that's what this person is trying to mention. So it is already something that companies have been doing. And traditionally, there are companies that do more blast furnaces and companies that do more the other type of, because it's also had to do with regions and whatever is available in the particular location of the plant and how much energy is there. So it is for both of these, it is also, there are things in parallel that are very important. For example, the improvement in having more and more renewable energies, because if we really want to make electrification green, then electricity has to be green. And also green hydrogen has become one of the possible solutions, one of them, because we always try to mention that there is not just one solution. So the availability of green hydrogen needs also to be stepped up. I don't know, Fabio, if you have anything to mention about that last thing about green hydrogen. I think we have a question here about China. Do you have numbers on them? Because if they are investing in green hydrogen.
I don't have the numbers. I don't remember by heart, but there's been some investment in particular in the steel sector with the China Baowu Steel, the major steel company who has made some investment in green hydrogen. Of course, is not going to be enough. And what's also important for the steel market is that the the fleet of China is more than 90% blast furnaces. So there is basically no electric arc furnace, and that can be switching a little bit more towards that. And secondary steel production would be would allow for quite quite short term and quite significant emissions reduction. So is of course, as we mentioned, it's not only green hydrogen as solution, of course, is very important for blast furnaces, but also switching to secondary steel production can be quite quite good for China too.
Yeah, and I would say that on the green, sorry, Paul, you are talking. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. I think we're crossing lines a little bit. I think maybe just to add to that, this is one of the primary reasons that CBI has developed hydrogen production criteria. It's at the moment hydrogen production that will include storage and transport going forward. But and I understand the reason for the question to consider the Chinese situation. The simple element is that hydrogen as a fuel source has ideal areas and highly efficient areas of use. Our concern is that that basket will be diluted through alternative uses where they're perhaps not as efficient. And I'd use an example like the hydrogen for heating a building, for example. We want to make sure that the hydrogen that we do have gets used correctly, appropriately, and in the most effective areas. And I feel that heavy industry is one of those where we would want to target that use. That said, I think the opportunity for the Chinese market is to expand on the hydrogen production processes and to do really to invest in those areas. And if I can be cheeky and say, in alignment with our own criteria and the sort of green and low carbon options that are available.
Thank you, Paul. Now, I just wanted to add, there's a good resource. I put it in the chat, but I don't know if it's for everyone. The IEA Global Hydrogen Review 2022, you can see charts there around the expectations of production of green hydrogen. Actually, if you look at it, Asia and China is not much. The biggest contributor over the next 5-10 years is actually Batam. So there are good numbers there to perhaps to have a look at. But yeah, we need more anyway. That's the bottom line. We need more because it's going to be an enabler, a massive enabler. There is another question here. Can you talk about the importance of carbon capture in hitting net zero? That's another burning one, important one. Who wants to take this one?
Yeah,
Paul.
No, you go. Yeah.
Thank
We're
you.
We're sitting next to each other. So.
I'll speak from a cement perspective. Probably will answer from a steel perspective. TCS is a critical part of the process, and the two elements that we use when we apply it are around leakage assessment and monitoring. And then obviously within the process itself, there's an element of capture in the process. From a cement perspective, I know there's a lot of discussion about reutilization of that captured carbon back in as an activator and within the SCM basket. So there's a lot of research and opportunity for carbon capture and, dare I say, carbon capture and utilization in the process. That said, we are very ambitious about the efficiencies that have to be shown. The technology needs to be adapted, be successfully used, and used properly. Having a plant that's only partially...
Well, Paul was
Muted.
Is it just for me or for everyone? Paul is cut.
Yeah, for some reason he is and I'm not. Mute yourself.
Paul, okay. You've been cut.
Yeah, but
been
you were cut. Finishing, right? So it's very similar when we talk about carbon capture for all these sectors, because the basis of our transition pathways is the assumptions made by the IEA, right? Because it's the most globally used decarbonization pathway. And they do include carbon capture in their future assumptions. So it is important. It is one of the solutions. So as I say, there is always an array, and it will depend on the region where this is located. If you have the possibility to store these, the geological places where you can have the storage of carbon. And also the technology needs to really show that it can capture enough so they can reach the high percentage of capture of CO2. And this is still something that we need to really see the projects taking place, because there is already a facility doing carbon capture of DRI and in the world. But yeah, we need to see these technologies get into really high levels of capture. However, in our criteria, we do accept the projects with carbon capture if these are ambitious enough.
Yeah, I mean, from a discussion, just adding on the discussion with companies on carbon capture, obviously very high risk technologies, and companies in the cement industry are using grants to fund this because they see it as a very, very high risk kind of venture. There's as well some skepticism, I have to say, about it. So that's where we are today. But we as a Climate Bonds Initiative, if this works, we would accept that type of technology. Questions, Fabiana, for you on the recycled steel versus primary steel, especially in the context of US and Mexico. Yeah, I think the question is more is about capacity of different countries to use recycled steel.
Yeah, the question about recycled steel, ideally, we could just switch to using only recycled steel and have a perfectly circular production of steel. But what the numbers tell us and the research is that there is not going to be enough scrap to meet the demand. However, it is going to increase the availability of scrap, especially in the emerging markets, as the infrastructure becomes older and the steel comes back into the supply chain of scrap. So it is going to play a major role. However, it's not going to be enough. But it is important to highlight that we need more electric arc furnaces, and we need to improve, especially in emerging markets, the availability of scrap. Because in places like Europe, we already have a supply chain of this that is in place and that supplies the electric furnaces. But in emerging markets, there needs a lot of investment needs to happen for this to take place. There is actually a recent report that showed that the major change, the major improvement in steel in China should come from scrap electric arc furnaces.
Thank you, Fabiana. One question around training for bonds, carbon bonds. I don't know what this meant really, but in terms of green bonds, SLBs, Ask Climate Bonds Initiative, I can recommend our training, if I can say. So if you go on our website, we do that. We do as well trainings on taxonomies and so perhaps probably you would find what you're looking for in there. I think that's it. You're welcome. So I think that's it. So any other questions on your, any other thoughts? Let's say last thought, Paul, Fabiana and Fabio on this.
Yeah, if I can maybe add a last thought with the comment from Joseph regarding fossil gas in the process. The IPCC report really underscored the carbon budget that we have and how we've overextended our budget. The bottom line is we need to leave all fossil elements in the ground, and we have to start phasing out quite aggressively, and the timelines are very short. Any existing fossil, big fossil users and fossil emitters, that's gas and coal and the whole suite. So I think as a final thought, we do need to move aggressively. There is, as I said, a financial case to really invest in significant infrastructural upgrades, which obviously from the audience perspective and a market perspective provides opportunity. And by following credible transition pathways, with the advantage of greenium benefits, I do feel that the market is ready for this shift. And the one thing that I'd like to maybe as a final note leave with the audience is that in essence, our criteria is globally written. I understand that, and referring back to the Chinese question earlier, there are unique situations and unique challenges in different geographic regions globally. But our criteria do consider all of those various aspects in unique criteria, but it's underscored by a scientific basis aiming to achieve a net zero 1.5 degree future, so Paris aligned. And I think that's ultimately the goal that we all have to work towards.
But Paul, on that, so what would you recommend? What would be your recommendation to an investor in emerging markets? So an investor, you know, can do many things. Investor is not obviously issuing, but what would be your recommendation?
To be perfectly honest, if you want the support of a green funding system, you have to provide and develop green solutions. And it's genuinely that simple. It does mean that changing business as usual is the mindset that has to be shifted. But if there's big investment that needs to be followed through to convert to electric arc furnaces, if I use the steel example, then that investment needs to be put in place. And just underlining both the point that Fabio and Fabiana made, there's one investment cycle to 2050. So invest now in the correct infrastructure and the correct processes, convert to a green pathway, and there's the opportunity from an investor perspective. So simple question, the market's there. The industries want to shift because there's access to a green product that their clients and their purchasers want to have access to. You don't want to strand yourself as a business, let alone strand yourself as an industry.
Thank you. Very important message there. Fabiana, final thoughts, and then Fabio, and then back to Pavel.
That's just adding up to what Paul said. At the end, at least from my point of view, it's when you look at the investors, of course, they have, it's very difficult decisions because there is risk. These technologies, most in many cases, are new, and especially for the commercial side of them, because there are also already pilot plants working. But this needs to happen, and this it's what we need in order to reach those that limit of 1.5. So it is about a commitment and a mix between the policy and the technologies, and also governments working together to help this change and this transition be accelerated. Yeah, there's not much more than that. Fabio?
Yes, what I would add, I think, and linking back to the importance of emerging markets and China in particular for cement and steel representing more than half of the global production, I guess what I would add is, other than what you said on the importance of scrap availability and being it moving to electric arc furnace, as we said, being one of the most important tools in China's pockets, I would add the fact that they are the importance of the scrap will also be the quality. So that's another aspect that we need to keep into account. It's not only the availability and how much scrap we have, but also the quality of it that is going to be needed for the electric arc furnace to really work efficiently. And on the other hand, for the blast furnaces reduction with the green hydrogen, yes, as we said, China is investing in green hydrogen and is also doing one of the largest in the world green hydrogen factories in the, and it's going to be used in industry in particular. To decarbonize the industry sector. So there's a lot of development there, and emerging markets are trying to keep up with the developed world too.
Thank you. Pavel, back to you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Can you hear me? Okay. So yeah, our time is running out. So I would like to thank Fabrizio, Fabiana, Fabio, and Paul for taking time and effort to prepare this presentation and participate in our event. I think it was very informative and insightful, providing a broad overview of the issues facing investors and companies in the steel and cement industries. Just to add, EMIA is now working on a research brief on this topic, which will be available on our website soon. And in the meantime, please watch our social media posts and newsletters for future exciting and educational events focused on carbon transition. All the best to you. Thank you and have a good day.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.